Everyone has a story, and this space is dedicated to sharing those stories, highlighting the journeys, passions, and experiences that make our community so vibrant and inspiring. I'm your host, Michelle Westgate, and I'm excited to bring you another incredible story from one of our members. So sit back, relax, and join us as we amplify the voices that make our district extraordinary. District 38, welcome to the Megaphone. Today, I'm excited to introduce a guest who radiates positivity and energy, David Harris. I had the pleasure of meeting David recently at an in-person training, and his enthusiasm and vibrant spirit left a lasting impression. David is a 57-year-old father to a wonderful daughter, and he was a loving and still is a loving husband to his late wife and best friend June, who passed away on September 16th, 2020. Professionally, David has dedicated 25 years to the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection, where he's worked passionately in the same program. His commitment to protecting the environment aligns with his personal love for nature's beauty, a love he celebrates through hobbies like singing, playing guitar, reading, and spending time on the beach. David's community involvement is equally impressive. He's a member of the Sustainability Action Group and a proud Knight of Columbus through his church. And of course, he's an active Toastmaster where he continues to inspire others with his voice and leadership. David, thank you so much for joining me today on the Megaphone. I'm thrilled to have you here.
What a wonderful introduction. You touched my heart. Thank you so much.
Well, we are sincerely thrilled to have you on the Megaphone. Your story is interesting, and one of the things that I found most interesting is that you are a member of a government club, and a lot of our members don't know much about government clubs. So I thought I'd ask you a little bit about your experience with a government club and what the differences and similarities are between a government club and a community club.
Good question. A government club, much like a corporate club, is only open to employees. Gives us a narrowing of our group, but allows us to expand in not just one program, but all programs. And that has its advantages. You get to meet other people, get to meet people in the workplace who do different jobs, who may do jobs that help you out. It's a great way to assist others with your experience as well. I have to say the biggest difficulties can be when staffing goes up and down. And that's where it's hard for us sometimes to keep members. People move on in their careers for whatever reason that they wish. And oftentimes it's harder for us to pull from where we can get people. With respect to community clubs, you guys have a much wider net to cast out. You can include anyone from anywhere. And that is a great advantage. But a disadvantage can be meeting places. We are fortunate in our department. And in many corporate clubs, they may have dedicated spaces. In some cases, they may even have dedicated times. In some cases, they can choose larger venues versus smaller venues. In our case, we can choose smaller or larger conference rooms, and even the first floor public hearing room, which can hold 120 people. That might be a bit more of a challenge for you. But there's a similarity. I think I've touched on it. The interaction, it's the same. Each one of us brings to the program our experiences, not just within Toastmasters, but everywhere. And we pool those resources, counsel, we assist each other in writing our speeches, But also, in a way, we train each other. We train each other not just to present, but when we take an active role as officers in training, we prepare ourselves for responsibilities. And that is priceless, in my opinion. Those
Thank
are our
you.
similarities.
Yes, exactly. I'm so thrilled that you're here to tell us about these differences, but I'm also interested about your personal journey with Toastmasters. What inspired you to join Toastmasters in October of 2014? That was a long time ago.
Yes,
And
10
how have
minutes.
you kept involved all these years?
I have to credit my wife, God rest her soul. I have to credit my wife. She was a driving force in my life in more than one way. You see, she was a founding member of our Toastmaster organization in the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection. And as you know, you have to build members. And who better to build members but then your spouse who works in the same department. So she urged me to come to meetings. She didn't force me, but as a supporting person and a supportive husband, I felt it my duty to do so. And believe me, it was a challenge. I would never consider myself a speech maker or a speech giver. I attended Toastmaster meetings and I took part in it. When table topics came up, I gave a table topic, and they were quite surprised that someone who didn't professionally speak, how professionally I sounded. And I became a member probably in October, which was, see, the first time I came would have been maybe a few months prior. I didn't feel like I was ready to give the full commitment, so I was able to commit in October, and I've been a member since then. I've done many officer roles. I think I've done all of them. So I've kind of taken a lot of responsibility. And one of the things I guess I was most known for was being a cheerleader, telling people things like, don't be afraid to start when you're ready to start. Just because someone says go does not mean you have to start at that moment. Take a deep breath, give yourself a moment to get ready, and then begin. Be as comfortable as you can speaking. Don't be afraid to use your hands. Move your hands around, walk around, especially when you're in a public setting, when you're in a group, so you draw attention to yourself. Pause. But pause for a reason. Don't pause in the midst of a thought. Pause to gather attention back to yourself. So there's a strategic pause. And don't be afraid to move your speech around. You're running out of time, and you know you've got to hit at least four more topics. And you're certain you want to get these four topics in. Move your speech up. Get to those points. And don't have to do them in any particular order if it's not necessary.
Right. I think these are all great tips for anyone who becomes a Toastmaster, and I love that you can bring that to this conversation. I'm curious though, you've been involved all this time. Why do you stay?
Ooh, why do I stay? I stay because I'm a person who likes to finish what they start. I don't like to leave things halfway or hung up. I like the feeling of giving the speech, of having done it and have overcome the feelings that I have inside when I give a speech, because it is not that easy. I struggle with being what I consider myself to be an introvert, although others would argue against that. But it is scary. It's very scary sometimes to speak, even in front of people that you know that are there to support you. There's still that anxiety. Even the best of actors feel that anxiety when they're out giving their performances. And you never would know this because they remain composed. And again, it comes with practice. Practice, practice, practice.
Absolutely. Practice is one of the things that we do here at Toastmasters. And I again, another brilliant piece of wisdom that you're sharing with us. The one thing I'm really curious about looking at your history and getting to know you a little bit is your journey down the road of science. You have become a well-respected geologist. And I'm curious to hear a little more about how did you end up a scientist? How did you end up in geology? Did you always know that you were going to do this, or was there something that pushed you in that direction?
My path to my career has been an interesting one. It started on a beach when I was a kid, and I looked at all these sand grains, and I said to myself, I wonder where they're from. How did they get here? Where did they come from? What are they made of? But then I started to grow up and I had to pick a job. And so, oddly enough, I picked probably something furthest from geology you could possibly imagine. I picked mechanical engineering. Now, both have a lot of math in them, but I picked mechanical engineering to the shock of many around me, especially the teachers. And I went out to California State University Fullerton, the Titans to those who follow baseball. And I spent about a year out there. The class that I was most interested in was the geology class. I felt most comfortable with. The professor and I, we talked with one another, and I got a real good feeling about it. And not that I didn't struggle completely, but I saw that the struggle becoming an engineer was overwhelming, it seemed. The computer stuff I got, the drawing stuff I was okay with. It's just, after a year, I left and I came home and I had to regroup myself, if you will. And I went into something called environmental studies. Getting closer and closer to it, but not getting there right away. So I attended Stockton College, which is now Stockton University, but Stockton College at the time. Actually, it was Richard Stockton State College, to be precise. Yes, that's kind of what I've been gravitating towards. Being more scientific means being precise. Anyway, I graduated and started looking for a job. Hardest time in my life. So hard that I ended up going back to school and getting a degree in geology. Still struggled to get a job afterwards. Actually, I was a secretary for a while, so I've done a lot of work. I've not just been a geologist. I kind of say I've done a whole slew of different things. Not bomb disposal expert, but you name a job, I've probably done it for money. But I finally got my position in the department in March of 1999. Moved around a little bit. I started out in a financial group, fund management, but I did review technical documents. Started then to the other side of the financial, the contract portion, and then finally got to being a geologist, an official geologist in the Bureau of Groundwater Pollution Abatement. All of this took some time.
I imagine a lot of work. It seems like your brain is always going, and that sort of makes me question how you take science. You are a scientist. You spoke about mechanical engineering and all of the math and your journey in science, but you're also a creative. So we from your bio that you sent to me earlier, I know you play guitar, you've been in community theater, you like to sing, you are definitely a creative. How do you go from science to creativity? Are they connected? Is it just this dual personality thing going on? What is that?
I think there are different aspects of your mind that definitely needs feeding. Some people can live in math. Some people can live in art. Some of us need a little bit of both. Many of my coworkers, at least two of my coworkers that I work directly with, play an instrument of some sort. Our first Sergeant at arms at in Toastmasters, he wasn't a geologist. He worked in the air program. He played the violin. I have a friend who worked in the what would become the Bureau of Remedial Action Permits, and he plays guitar. A former geologist retired from our department still comes to the building, plays guitar. So there's always an aspect of art in it, in our minds, I think. And there's that balance that some of us need. It's a great relief measure. The book I was mentioning to you earlier, the book Quiet, The Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking by Susan Cain, she had remarked, among other things, playing an instrument and also taking part of with Toastmasters. There were people who it helped calm them and bring them out of their introversion. For performing in front of people is certainly more extroverted as opposed to introverted. I just guess we're all a mix. We're a mix of some things. And honestly, my wife, again, a big part of my life, encouraged me. And I think that helps out the most, just the encouragement. Go out and do it. Her listening to me stumbling as I play. I played something to her once and I told her what it was. And she says, "Oh, really? That's what it is?" That was so like disappointing. But at the same time, she was always supportive in it because she knew it made me feel better. I think that's part of it. We need to feed our creative selves in as much as we need our critical selves.
I can understand that. Somebody asked me about all the work I do, and can you work from home? Well, I worked from home for almost 10 years, and the way I feed my peopling is through Toastmasters or other volunteer activities. So I think that's also a reason why we keep doing things like coming back to Toastmasters, or some people it would be the creative side, as you're discussing, where you need to pick up a guitar and play, sing. How much fun is that? I love that that you have all of these different aspects of your life, and you are such an interesting person. I understand that even in the way that you met your wife, there was something different about that. There was something that you'd like to share with us.
Yes. How I Met My Wife, or How I Met Her Before She Met Me. It was 1993, and my parents and I went to a restaurant on Route 33 in Hamilton, New Jersey. It was called the Hamilton Family Restaurant. It doesn't exist anymore. But at the time, we stopped there to have a lunch, early dinner. And I walked in and sat down with my parents. And I just turned my head slowly to the left. And I saw this woman walk by. She had a gorgeous smile. And just something drew me to her as she walked by and walked by later on, because she was also working as a waitress there. And I saw her name tag, and I couldn't get the letters on, but I saw the name tag. I worked in security, so commonly I pick up on these things, watching people walk in. It's part of our job. But this was something I picked up. And so I said to myself, I want to get to know that woman. I want to talk with her. I know she was working, but I was going to make a determined effort to find out something about her. Well, we were there, sitting down with our, making our orders and sitting down ordering, eating our food. And as I progressed, I thought to myself, who you are? What do you have to offer this person? You've got no job. You've been struggling out to get a job. And now you're going back to college, showing you've gone no place. My heart was sinking. And by the time my meal ended and I got up, turned around, the last bits of my feelings towards getting to know her just disappeared as I saw her smiling and talking with her coworkers. Couldn't put her through that. I couldn't do that to her. I couldn't be somebody to her if I couldn't be somebody at all. And so I walked by. Fast forward to October 15th, 1996, in Wright-Riemann Labs, Rutgers University, New Brunswick. We were seeing a presentation of a film, a movie, where they used side scanning sonar to find something called the USS Monitor from the USS Monitor in Merrimack. The room was dark. The doors were closed. The door opened, and I was in the middle of the room, so I could see pretty much everywhere. The door opened, and the light was shining through, and I caught the form and figure of a person standing in the doorway. My head slowly turned to the left, and there she was, the exact same woman that I saw there at the restaurant. I knew. I looked over. That was her. There was no one to convince me otherwise. And I said to myself at that time, I'm going to get to know that woman. She was walking after the program ended. We were walking to the geology lab where the computers were. And I saw she had her bag with her and her tag was hanging out. Now, the department IDs at the time, because she was at the time working at the department, still did until her passing, had your name and your date of birth written right on your ID. So I said to her, you better be careful. You could lose that because it's only held on by a clip. And so I looked at her ID and I saw her date of birth. And I looked at her and said, finally, someone my age is in this room. I was surrounded by 20 somethings and I'm like in my 30s. I'm getting old. I'm like, come on. Finally, someone close to my age. And so we started to talk with one another. I helped her out with her geophysics course because that was what the course was. We were in geophysics. And we just started to blossom into a couple. That was the happiest time of my life. And just getting to know that woman right there, getting to know her. And so I kind of knew her before she knew me. And I then told her the story many years later. Did you work at Hamilton Family Restaurant? How did you know?
That's fantastic. I love this story, David, and you are so passionate and loving, and I really appreciate you sharing this with us. I'd like to give you one last opportunity to say something maybe inspiring or encouraging to anyone who's listening to your story today. Maybe they're an introvert and you want to help to encourage them to get out of their shell. Maybe it's something else that you'd like to tell us.
First of all, getting out of your comfort zone is hard, especially if you're an introvert. It can be frightening. But one thing you should know is that you're not alone. And I know that's not a complete answer. I know that doesn't quell your feelings. But know there are other people out there that want to share with them and you their experiences. Don't be afraid to push the envelope. Eleanor Roosevelt once said, try one thing every day that makes you scared. I'm paraphrasing, possibly. It can only expand your window. We have such a beautiful open world, and we need to step out into it. Or try. It doesn't matter if you fail or you succeed. It's great to succeed, mind you, but it's okay to fail. Thomas Edison once said it took him 1,000 times to create a light bulb. And he said what he learned was that there are 999 ways not to make one. He knew that failure was only a part of the process. We succeed. And with practice, when you do your speeches, Toastmasters, you get more comfortable in front of people. Practice is a really important part of Toastmasters. But I think Toastmasters as a whole is a great opening experience so that you can see the struggle that others may have and you see the camaraderie and the support that is there. Toastmasters has helped me through this time with the loss of my wife because I didn't just gather members, I gathered friends, people who had a common interest, who may not have had anything to do with any other interest, but we all had a common interest in developing ourselves, to overcoming our fears. Because when you overcome a fear, there is no greater joy than you might ever have, than many of us ever have, than to conquering something that's within us that's been holding us back. Because when that door opens, so many other doors open for you.
David, you have had a fantastic and well-rounded life, and I really appreciate you joining me today on the megaphone. Your positive energy and your passion for your wife, for your environment, your commitment to the community, you are truly inspiring the whole way around. It's been quite the pleasure hearing about your journey and your dedication to Toastmasters and the many ways that you're making an impact around the world, around your community. I know our listeners will walk away feeling motivated about your story and your enthusiasm for life. Thank you for sharing your voice with us today.
Well, I thank Toastmasters for being a part of my life, and I thank you as well for reaching out to me, and have a great day.
Thank you, David. You too. Thank you for tuning in to the Megaphone. It's been an honor to share another unique voice from our District 38 community. Remember, everyone has a story and every voice matters, especially yours. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends and fellow members and stay connected as we continue to amplify the inspiring stories from our district. Until next time, this is Michelle Westgate encouraging you to embrace your voice and share your story. Thank you for listening.